to talk for a moment about two personalities and equate them with your life in 1966. Josh White and Paul Robeson.
Paul taught me about being proud because I was Negro. I had always had this pride, this fierce, sterile almost kind of pride, because my grandmother had said, "You must be proud," but she never told me all the horror of her background. One didn't talk about it, you see, and then she died. And I was getting more and more in that middle class trap with Negroes who might have a job who didn't speak about it also. I worked even at the time I was 16 and with Cecil, with organizations, but he never told me the reasons why I had a right to some of that pride, you see. Paul was the first one who came to me and said, "Your grandmother was a fiery little woman who chased me off the street corners of Harlem, and she was this and she was that." I said, "Really? Nobody ever told me that." He said, "Why, she was a wonderful Negro woman because she wanted to help her people and she felt she had a right to it. And she made this expression, noblesse oblige, mean being proud of her people." And I said, "But nobody ever said it." And he sat down for hours and he told me about Negro people. And what, you know, I've read it in some books and never learned it in school. They don't teach it in history books. I couldn't know anything unless I really had moved up by then from the South and had been with Negro people who were terrified, you know, and couldn't do anything about it. And he didn't talk to me as a symbol of a pretty Negro chick singing in a club. He talked to me about my heritage. And that's why I always loved him. And I didn't even know, he didn't even speak to me as a leader, quote, Negro leader. And so I grew to think then about all the areas of it. And Josh taught me about singing about it. And I couldn't sing, you know, and I was fighting that kind of inverted chauvinism from white people who said, "Well, she can't sing the blues," you know, and so I felt embarrassed. But by 1966, I find more and more myself calling upon the things that Paul said to me, because it's as of now, except he is not our leader. We eat up our leaders, you know. We history eats our leaders up. We eat them up. We drain them and we throw them out because everything moves so fast. But I don't think I could have felt the kind of pain I did and the kind of sense of recognition when I saw Alabama and hoses and dogs and children if I hadn't had Paul in my life and Josh. And so I wasn't unaware. I wasn't thrown into it like a liberal. I had a sense of identification.
You made an album that was particularly socially significant. Did Now sell?
No, banned on quite a few stations.
We're going to play it on Pacific.
Oh, good.
If those historic gentlemen came back today, Jefferson, Washington, and Lincoln, and Walter Cronkite put them on Channel 2 to find out what they were thinking, I'm sure they'd say, "Thanks for quoting us so much, but we don't want to take a bow. Enough with the quoting. Put those words into action, and we mean action."
Strange and
Silent Spring.
It was written at the same time that Adolph Green, Betty Comden wrote the lyrics to Now and Julie Stein for a performance for SNCC, as a matter of fact, in New York, a benefit that I did with Frank Sinatra.
As a matter of fact, you mentioned that that was the hardest work you ever did, selling seats to them.
Yes, because people at that time were afraid to have their names on checks made out to SNCC, you see. Now it's quite safe.
I'm glad to hear you say that, sitting on the board of directors.
Yes, well, I wasn't saying it without all of my tongue completely out of my cheek.
Lena Horne, listeners I know are indebted to you for the time you spent with us. Speaking personally, I am much obliged. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I feel that you were so practical, and I wouldn't have spoken as comfortably as I have, long-winded though I am, unless you had been.
Pacifica Radio in Berkeley has presented Lena, a sound portrait of a multifaceted lady, Lena Horne. The interview was recorded at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco. I'm Gene D'Alessi.
Miss Lena Horne interviewed by Gene D'Alessi in May 1966 at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco for KPFA Radio. You can read a formal transcript of this interview at pacificaradioarchives.org or from thevaultradio.org. And that does it for this week's From the Vault. Thank you, Lena Horne, for being part of the Pacifica story. The recordings you heard today have been preserved for all time thanks to the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, which is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts and past grants from the Grammy Foundation and the American Archive, and continued support from our Pacifica Radio listeners. We are now streaming and podcasting online at fromthevaultradio.org. Thanks for all the Pacifica Station listeners who joined our campus campaign and so far have sponsored over 1,800 schools with the From the Vault series. For more information, call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or visit us online at pacificaradioarchives.org. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/campuscampaign. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. This program was written and produced by Mark Torres and Brian DeShazer. The series is executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and your host, Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening.